Hello, everyone, and welcome to the From Girls to Women Telesummit. Tova Gar here, your host. I'm really happy you decided to join us today, whether you're here today for the first time or you've been listening with us every day, wherever you may be around this wonderful world right now. I feel so fortunate to be able to bring to you the wisdom of so many amazing experts who are going to help us gain insights and learn tools to raising empowered, heart-centered young women. It's really my great pleasure to introduce to you today's expert, Jill Angelo. After 2 decades of managing operations for a multi-million dollar electrical manufacturing firm, Jill took her diverse toolkit into the fast-moving world of spiritual self-help publishing, where she has worked with authors such as Marianne Williamson, Andrew Harvey, and Matthew Fox. During that time, she delved deeply into the spiritual studies and practices, traveling extensively to Asia, Africa, Europe, and North America, which I have to say I'm a little jealous. Her creative passion, her education in marketing and design, and her background in both psychology and the mystical arts allowed her to transform a living or working environment into a space that's both uniquely you and is an efficient, welcoming oasis of calm. Her fine-tuned abilities and out-of-the-box approach to life have uniquely prepared her for creating sacred spaces for people with wide-ranging interests and budgets. I'm really excited to have Jill with us today. As we explore sacred space, what it is, how we can create it in our own environment, and why it can be such an important component, both in our lives, but in our girls' lives as well, helping them find a center of calm and grounding, especially during these turmoil times of adolescence. So welcome, Jill.
Thank you so much for having me, Tova. I'm so excited to be here.
Thanks for being here. I'm really excited to have you here today, since to me this is such an important topic that we often ignore. And I'd like us to really start, if it's okay with you, with explaining what sacred space actually is.
I think there's a lot of people out there that would give you their own version of sacred space. And I think all of us, though, would kind of have a similar response. And that mine is that my goal in working with people is to help them transform their current living environments into that of one of being sacred. And for me, sacred is reflected in having an organized, calm, relaxing reflection that's their own individual style. And in turn, what that does is it helps you create wellness. And that wellness is created by replenishing your energy and providing you inner peace because the environment that you created allows for that to occur. So it's somewhat of a circle, if you will. It's like a cycle.
Can you explain what you mean when you say cycle?
Sure. We look at homes and we buy our homes, and usually when we go looking, we have houses. We do this transformation where we're going to go out to look at houses. And then we find the house. And that house then transitions into being our home. And there's that sense of pride behind the home. And we have all these dreams and aspirations of what we're going to create. And we're going to either get married and have children, or we've had children, we need to move on because we've had more children, or our children have gone away to college and we've downsized. And we want to create these environments for ourselves that are safe havens, they're nurturing havens, they're where we go not only just as a foundation of protection, but they're a place where all of our dreams, hopes, and wishes are contained, and how we are going to project those out into the world and create them. And oftentimes, as we know, life happens, and we get busy, and work happens, and we have kids, and we have all these responsibilities, and the house might become chaotic, and it becomes cluttered, and it may not be exactly what we had hoped for it to be. And so what happens is, in me working with people, and what I like to do is bring you back to center. Why did you buy this home, house that actually became a home? What were your dreams and aspirations here? Did you fulfill them? If you did, what else would you like to fulfill? How do you live comfortably? When you walk in, how do you feel? These are questions that I like to ask people. When you come home every day, how do you feel? Are you exhausted and relieved and you come home and you're rejuvenated? Or are you exhausted when you come home and you feel even more exhausted because the house is a mess or it's full of chaos and clutter and you don't know where to begin? And you'd be amazed at the amount of people who would rather be at work than be in their home. So in working together by walking through your home, I like to go in each room and ask questions about what I see. And I like to see that people can tell me the story of why they have every piece in the house. I should say, in their home, why they have every piece there. Why do you have that lamp? Why did you choose that lamp? Why do you have that blanket? Tell me why you chose that color. And there's a lot of people who can't answer. They shrug their shoulders. Many can answer, and that's good. And what we do then is we go further. And little by little, the story comes of what the hopes and dreams were for that environment.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds to me like there's a tremendous amount of intentionality there, of really knowing what your goal is from that space and what you want to create there, and then working towards making that a reality.
That's what my goal is in working with people. Oftentimes, though, we buy, we rent, we move into these locations for what the generalized reasons would be. When we start to take it down or up, depending upon how you want to look at it, and view it as sacred, because everything is its own level of sacredness, the house starts to transition into that home and become a whole other working, living environment for people to find that peace, the rejuvenation. People like to keep busy. They like to distract themselves. I want people to come home and just relax and be. You can go to other people's homes, and we've all done this. We've gone to people's homes, and you think, Susie's having a party. Can't wait to go to Susie's house. Love being there. How great it is to be there. A lot of that is reflective on how Susie created that environment. Or we think about, I don't want to go to Carrie's house. They're always arguing. That energy is contained inside of there. You feel that. People say that they feel, sometimes people say, I don't know what it is, I just sense something, because they can't put their finger on it. But they're aware of what environment they're in. And those are the things, those subtle intuitions that we have, that when you pay more attention to, help develop and show you how, for yourself and for others, how that interior world is a reflection of the exterior world. They work together. I hope that made sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I know that a lot of people that I know, when they hear the term sacred space, think of it as something that is religious. Mm-hmm. Is it?
For some it can be. For others it isn't. For me, I think we'd have to define religion. Is it reflected where I feel that it has to be and you incorporate specifics? Not necessarily, no. For some, nature is everything, and that in and of itself is sacred, and all the sacred texts would refer to nature. So, yes. Does it have to be? No. Is it something that people have to draw in? Not necessarily at all. Do people? Yes. Many people have altars, and altars are, there's different types of altars. There's the everyday altar, believe it or not, that is a woman cooking in her kitchen. When you see people who love to cook, you'll see how their kitchens are set up. And then they have all the beautiful utensils, and they'll have three or four types of olive oil, and they'll have all these different spices, and they make these beautiful meals. And that becomes their altar. It's a practical altar. And then there's the spiritual altar for those who like to meditate and have their altars and their traditions of what they do. And with that, they'll have beautiful cloths, or they'll have candles, or they'll have trinkets and deities that they use in their everyday practices. All of them are good. All of them are sacred. All of them are reflected of that environment that they live in. All of those nurture. When we get ready in the bathroom every day, and we as women pull out our makeup and we get ready, there's that ritual. And that ritual of how we get ready, and if you think you don't have a ritual, then I ask people to consider what it's like when you're in the shower and you reach for the shampoo bottle and there's no shampoo. And how you get thrown off guard because it's like, but wait a second, the shampoo bottle was just here. There was shampoo in it. So it's those rituals and how we work that into how we present it and how we incorporate that in how we get ready on our daily basis. Or how we make our bed. Just making your bed is a level of sacredness as well. Do we just throw the covers back? Or do you smooth out all the covers and plop up all the pillows and rearrange the bed so it's a beautiful place to get back into when you return every day? Some people just leave the bed unmade. And that's okay too. Yet is that sacred to you? or is it that you're in a hurry and you're in a rush and that adrenaline's pumping and the anxiety's going? And what does that do? That's reflective in how you just left that bed. You were in a hurry. It was a mess. You got up and you left. I hope that makes sense again as well.
Yeah, I mean, you're making me think about my bed right now and what I did this morning. And, you know, what is that really a reflection of? And so, you know, I'm wondering, why do you feel this can be so important, you know, especially for girls during their teenage years, to create a space that is a sacred space?
I think that it's so important for girls because there's enough pressure on them in society to begin with. Back when I was a kid, and I'm in my mid-40s, back when I was a kid, there was pressure. And I don't think there was nearly the amount of pressure on me as there is on young girls right now. The pressure, what society shows as beauty, the celebrities and how the celebrities portray themselves, the style of clothing, the pressure to succeed in school, the pressure to succeed as a married, to get married and have children and to follow that depiction of what life is, where it's an open avenue now for them. They have so many opportunities in front of them, and while that's wonderful, it's stressful and pressureful. So to be able to live or create the environment that's theirs, that becomes a reflection of themselves, that's calm and nurturing, also helps have them project that when they're out there in the world, going through school, working as jobs, considering getting married with boyfriends and whatnot, and following the traditions that we all followed as women, yet every generation has something different. And so I feel that it's very, very important, especially for children, to have those sacred environments to go to so that they can just R&R, relax, and recommit and be with themselves so that they have that time. Because we're in a technological world. Everyone's attached to their phones. Everyone's busy. Everyone's on the go. And it's very difficult sometimes for people just to scale back and take a breath. I didn't have a cell phone growing up, right? I don't know if you did, but I didn't. So when I look at younger children now and they're on their iPads and they're on their phones and all that, I don't know that they understand what it's like to truly take that break. For them, that break is sometimes when they don't have the iPad or the phone, or it's been taken away from them, or even their parents go, you know what, you need to take a break from this right now. And they almost view it as punishment. But there's something wonderful about sitting quietly in a quiet, comfortable space, or to sit in nature without all the technology around us, that instills that quiet and value in who they are, as well as their parents, their friends, you and I.
Thank you. So I'm wondering, is sacred space something that anyone can create? Do we need an expert's help to make this happen, or can anybody create this?
Anybody can create it. It's just a factor of remembering. It's just a factor of remembering. When I walk through people's homes and I ask the questions that I ask, you'd be amazed at answers that are given, or a lot of people like to duplicate what they see in photos. And I think that's fabulous. Marketing is wonderful. You can walk in, you can look at all these glorious magazines, and they'll give you great ideas. And the ideas are what they're there for. Take that idea, incorporate it into your own. There's a lot of people out there who don't just take a specific idea. They attempt to duplicate the entire look. And then when you say, when I've questioned, it becomes, well, it doesn't feel the same. It won't, nor should it. If you're looking to duplicate someone else, it's not the true reflection of who you are. I love when I see seashells that are there, but they're seashells that were bought in a bag in a store. They're not seashells that they were gotten on the beach. Now, I understand if you've never had the opportunity to get to the beach to get the seashells, but I've yet to meet someone who has seashells who hasn't been to the beach. It's the art that we have on the walls. The art that's on the walls is gorgeous. When it's stock art bought from somewhere, and now we have the technology to be able to create glorious art from the photos we take ourselves, I encourage people to do that so that reflection of who you are is surrounded by you, and so that story becomes a passionate story instead of a shrug of a shoulder where, yeah, I like that in the store. Tell me why you liked it. How did that speak to you? So if you come back to center and you look at all of the items that you have in your home and you let them tell the story and you tell the story as to the dance between the two, you'll see that you created it all on your own. It's just a sense of remembering. I just
right,
like to guide people back to that.
Right. I mean, you're making me think of my own home when I moved here to New York, and the first thing I did was create pictures of my own that I took for a trip when I was on a trip to Peru, and that's
mm-hmm.
what's in my apartment. And every time people come in, they comment on it, and it sparks a whole conversation
right.
on where the picture's from, and then my story, and it's really about who I am, the space reflecting who I am.
Right. And it's very important because this is where you spend a tremendous amount of time. Not to mention for those who are away at school or going to school or for those who are in the workforce, when kids go off to college, it's really important that their room, and there's tremendous pressure. Let's think of the girls and the boys who are going off to college right now. That pressure to fit in, to be hip and look good, to do well in their studies, and what is their room going to look like? And it's the hesitation of, for instance, do I bring this piece that I've had forever, that I've grown up with, that's something that nurtures me, that makes me feel good? But you're concerned as to how that might be seen. And I encourage people to bring it. I have a teddy bear that I was given the day I was born. It's in a chest. I keep it. I often, it with beautiful things that I treasure, that I don't necessarily display. If I had my own children, I may have, but I don't. So this treasure chest that I have, or a hope chest, we remember what hope chests were back in the day, this beautiful cedar hope chest that I have has all these gorgeous memories of childhood that I've hung on to that mean so much to me. I might not necessarily display them in the house, but I do have them around because of how they speak to me. If I were going off to college right now, I'd still have that teddy bear with me because that's something that brings me back to center when I'm anxiety struck. Or when I was nervous about a class or a test, there's something that reminds me of home, my family, the people that are around me, the people that are close to me when I can't be with them. And some, it could be something more subtle. Maybe it's just a throw blanket that was in an office, in mom's room, something that meant something in the family. A sweatshirt that was dad's could mean a lot to a son at school. And it's not that anybody necessarily has to know it. It's something that has that much value and brings that much a level of security. And, again, I'll go back to the word sacred. Because for it to mean that much to you, I think that the word sacred is a very important word. It's how we view things. Our bodies are temples, and we take them for granted. And that's another form of sacredness, our bodies, who we are as people. And sacred doesn't have to be viewed as, when we were talking before about religion, as a religious word. It's often depicted to be that way. But I think it goes across the board with multiple reasons or reflections.
So it seems to me like what you're proposing is like the first steps of creating the sacred space is really setting your intention and your goal for what the space is going to be and then making sure that you're surrounding yourself not by outside measures of what's necessarily cool or looks good, but starting first with the things that are meaningful to you and, you know,
correct.
Create calmness in your own space.
Create calmness. Look around at the items that you have. Again, what's their story? What do they mean to you? I can go in people's closets, and I could see quite the story in the closets by the clothes, primarily the clothes that are used and worn, and then by the clothes that still have tags on them. And then we as women, especially moms who have had children, oftentimes there's moms who hang on to the business suits and the business attire, and they've decided to stay at home and be mom, which we know how rewarding and incredible a job that is. And then we have moms who, having children, they do put on weight. It's part of the process. It's a beautiful process. And they keep those jeans as a reminder because they want to get back in them. And then they might have a second or a third child. And they may not ever get back in them. And that's okay. Yet they hang on to that pair of jeans. And then what happens is that pair of jeans causes this friction for them because they feel that they should be back in them when they may never. So why hang on to them and indirectly torture yourself by looking at it? Why hang on to the business suit if you have no intention of going back to work? There's that, again, it's a dance. And so if you were to take all of that out and free that clutter and free that space for new to come, because all of us have heard about how if you remove clutter, you open up the space and you create more, which is very true. I would donate. I encourage people to donate them. Don't look back at those jeans. Don't look back at those business suits. Move forward. See what new comes. See what else you create. Bless it for what is and let it go. Unless there's some need to keep it, I encourage people to let it go. And most often than not, the women know deep down they're not going to get back in those jeans. They'll openly admit it. They don't want to go back to work. They love being a stay-at-home mom. Embrace it. Don't put that pressure on you by having to keep that around. And when they do, they feel so much better. There's plenty of organizations to donate to and create it from there as well.
Now, you bring up a topic that is so relevant in my life, I know, and many people I know, which is the topic of clutter. You know, we tend to accumulate things and really have a hard time letting go. And any tips or insights on how we can move out of that sense of clutter and why we're better off without it?
Oftentimes what my suggestion is, when you start to view what clutter is, and as you said, we do all have it. When you start to look at where your clutter is, I encourage people to go room by room, project to project, because clutter can be an overwhelming thing. When you start to be aware of where it is and how much you may have, it can be very overwhelming. It's not something we want to do on a Sunday afternoon when it's gorgeous outside to clean out drawers, yet we've known for months we should clean them out. So I encourage people to have a positive attitude and to break things off into piles. Those that you absolutely don't want, those you are uncertain of, and those you're going to keep. The absolutely positively don't want and the uncertain. By the time you finish, when you come back around to the uncertain, you'll have a much grander idea as to where your level of certainty is. And it will fall, most of them fall to the you don't want them any longer. Rarely are many kept. I encourage people to bless them, to say some form of a prayer for themselves, a mantra, however you want to view it. Thank you for all this has given me. I'm grateful for what I've had. I pass this on wherever it needs to go and send it with the best wishes, because everything we have has our energy attached to it. And so you want to make sure that it's cleansed to move forward. I do that with everything that I have. On one of the trips that I took to India, I bought clothes to specifically go to India in, and I left all the clothes in India because I knew I was going to bring so many things back with me to decorate. So I didn't want my clothes. So I blessed all the clothes, and I left them folded neatly on the bed in the hotel room with a note that said, please pass these forward for anyone that can use them. And you signed it and left it go. And when you release that energy to go free, it clears things up for you. There's a lot of pressure that I've seen, again, in society with our busyness that we want to create. And we want to, that's a great idea, let me do this, and we buy it thinking that we're going to be able to make it happen. And then life happens, and it gets ahead of us, and we're unable to. So if you've had things that you've had for 6 months to a year, oftentimes if you haven't worn those clothes, you're probably not going to. Most people don't. So it doesn't hurt. And I often ask people to consider doing it every quarter. You know, make it a ritual. I'm going to clean out what I'm doing. And work room to room, project to project, because bite-sized pieces are much easier to do versus taking on the entire room at once. Some can. Some bring in friends and do it together. Some do it as a family. I mean, there's plenty of ideas and options for people to do to clear clutter. When they do, though, I have yet to meet a person who doesn't say, wow, I'm really glad I did this. It feels so much better in here. There's just this automatic sense of knowing how much greater they feel.
I'm going to have to start that myself. I feel like it's a never-ending process for me. I'm constantly clearing out clutter, and somehow I keep accumulating more. So I will take your advice and get it going.
there are plenty of different, I mean, there's great organizational places and organizational ideas and places to arrange the items that you choose to keep. Sometimes it could be based just on the way you have it organized. And there's professional organizers out there that can come in and help people as well. The clutter to me, too, is, and I've seen this numerous times, how many people have treadmills, and the treadmill isn't really a treadmill, it's a second closet because we drape all of our clothes on it. And what does that signify? You know you really don't want to be on the treadmill. You know you should get on the treadmill. And then that starts that whole thing in our heads of, I really should, I really should, I really should, but I don't want to, I don't want to. So guess what? When we throw all of our clothes on it, we don't look at it. We don't see it. So that's another thing that I try to get to the bottom of with people. You know, we're back to the body being sacred. Honor your body. Take care of yourself. Bite-sized pieces on the treadmill. Clean all the clothes off. Get back on there and make it fun, not dread.
Absolutely. So I'm sure some of the listeners who are listening to us right now are saying to themselves, well, you know, this sounds great, but I don't actually really have a big budget, or I only have a small home, or like me, they live in New York in a very small apartment. Does that matter?
Not at all. Not at all. It's what you value. It's how you see the items that you have. It's to put you back in touch with what's inside of your home. If people think that it's a big budget because what they want to do is go back out and rechange everything, you don't have to. Go into a bedroom, take the pillows out of that bedroom, put them in another bedroom, and just move your own items around inside of your house. That doesn't cost a penny. Just relocate the items that you have and see how the room comes to life in a different meaning. I encourage people to stand at the entryway of every room. First, the rooms that they love, then the rooms that they don't care for. Most people have an area of their home that they don't care to be in. First, I ask people to stand and look at the rooms that you do. Why do you love that room? What are your favorite pieces in there? And why? What's their story? What are the pieces that you don't so much care for and why? Oftentimes, when we get to the room that they didn't care so much about, it's because that's the one that they either ran out of budget for, if they never were able to finish due to time. It becomes a gathering room of all kinds of things, et cetera. I mean, there's a laundry list of reasons. But when you embrace that room again because you spent time in the other ones that you love so much, it's much easier to take the project on and rearrange it. So, no, again, you don't have to have a large budget at all. Just come back in touch with what's inside of your own home. And I love to see people redistribute what they already have. A vase in one room has an entirely different look in another. Bring in those flowers, bring in fresh flowers. Those don't cost much at all. Grow them, and then they cost even less. Simple design tips.
Right. So if I wanted to get started with the girl in my life and help her create a sacred space for herself, you know, take her room or take another space and really make it a space that is a sacred space for her, would you be willing to share maybe some steps that, you know, I and listeners could take to start that process?
Sure. My first suggestion would be to look at color. What is this girl's favorite color and why? What does that color represent for her? Is it because it makes her feel secure? Is she happy? She'll tell you. She will tell you. If given the space, she'll tell you. She'll ask her why. Capitalize on working with that color. Find shades of those colors to work with inside. Say it's pink. You've got your bright pinks and you've got your light pinks. You've got accent colors. The next I would go to the accent color. What color makes you happy here? Why does it? How do you like it? Oftentimes you'll get the I don't know, and then you'll say, yes, you do, tell me why. And I'll be able to tell you, I feel this. Do you feel empowered? Do you feel, again, happy? Do you feel successful? Do you feel calm? What is behind that? That's the first and foremost. Because when we look at a home as a whole, there's the foundation and the structure on the outside, but as you come inside, those walls are the protective pieces on the inside, and that color helps reflect that for them. So I encourage to do that. The next thing I look at is texture. What what do they like to feel? What's their sense when they're stimulated, when they touch it? And if they're not sure, when I teach, what I do is I blindfold people, believe it or not, and I hand them material so that they can feel the material with their eyes closed. Because our senses are different than when you take a sense away, you capitalize on the other senses. And now the girls will be able to say how they feel. Some girls like lace, other people don't. Some prefer velvet, some prefer fleece. So find that, because that gives us a nurturing feeling when that material is around us, or that material is what covers us at night when we sleep. So then focus on textures and work with that. I would surround them with photos of things that bring them the most joy. If they're in college and they're in their dorm room, their favorite family vacation, their animal or pet, so they have those photos around them. Things that while they're away from the parent, they can identify, and if they're feeling nervous, they can have that sense of security right away. And if they're not and they're feeling happy, they have even more joy to be able to look at it.
Right. And if, you know, and if a girl is still at home, a space where when, you know, she feels she needs to get away, that can be the space.
Right. And then that's where she goes and she closes the door and she reads a book and she takes a deep breath, and if she meditates, she meditates. And oftentimes, and I know this is very, very, very hard, but I have encouraged parents to ask their daughters and their sons to take a step back and leave the iPhone or the iPad and or the computer off, or to leave it in another room and not have it. Go spend time in there just quietly alone. And then when the phone or the computer is reintroduced, they should be able to sense the difference. Energetically, you can't not pick up on it. That's why from a feng shui perspective, oftentimes you're told don't have televisions and electronics in the bedroom, because it's all that extra energy from the current of electricity that's in the room that heightens the senses in the room that you don't necessarily need to sleep with. You don't really want to be surrounded by it. So if the parents can get those daughters or sons to do that, that would be great for them to try it. And little by little, the girls will come into sensing those differences. They may actually even enjoy it. That's the goal. Mm-hmm. Then they have a greater appreciation for being in that room on their own.
Right. So what can be the effect of creating these sacred spaces for ourselves over time?
Over time, I think that my experience of working with people has been peace, calm, a greater sense of knowing, a greater sense of awareness, better breathing, believe it or not. We don't pay attention to how we breathe. Your meditation teaches you to be aware of your breath when you're breathing. A lot of anxiety is very shortness of breath. When you're calm, you breathe deeper. Your sense of awareness is greater. You're actually happier to be around. You're more joyful yourself. You smile at others. If people don't pay as much attention to themselves. When we come back, and here's an example. We go on vacation, we come home from vacation, and on vacation we put our phones away and we check out from electronics and we are present and we're focused and we're there, and forever how many days that is. Allow for that to happen every day in your life. Give yourself hours of that every day in your life. That's the part that helps make that sacred as well. Because you're valuing yourself and you realize, I don't have to be attached to my electronics all day long. I can break from it and it's okay. Then I marvel at people who can go on vacation and do it like it's nothing, but then they come home and they say absolutely not, and they're still answering email at 10:30 at night because they're still working. So to treat that, to give yourself those times out, because as adults, we need the times out also.
Right. I don't think we appreciate how much we need those times out until we actually take them.
Right.
I'm so glad that you mentioned the issue of technology, because if you hadn't said it, I was going to ask about it, because I feel that, you know, today we're so connected. I mean, like you said, I didn't grow up with a cell phone either. They weren't in existence. And, or if they were, very few people had them. And you know, today, so many, not everyone, but many, many kids have one. Many kids have a computer in the room, a TV in the room. And so by creating this space, if the, all those things are still in there, often we're not actually creating a sacred space. We're just going into another space in order to stay, you know, connected in a different kind of way.
Right. And it allows for some children who last them, because there's parents out there who will say, well, my kid's always in their room. Sure. There's also that level that's viewed to me, and again, this is my opinion, as a form of isolation and separation. Those kids don't have to come out of those rooms when we do have the TVs and the computers and the phones. They're attached in that world. If that were shut down, not necessarily taken away, shut down so that they can decompress themselves and just rest or relax or read a book. I mean, now people encourage you to read the books online, which is fantastic. Yet, to just take technology away and take it out of the equation for a bit, you really do restore yourself. Because you go, like, I walk my dogs. I have four dogs, actually. They're all on the floor right now while you and I are having this conversation, along with the cat. I work in silence all day long. The only noise I hear is either my own voice on the phone or my dogs, because they let me know someone's come about. And when I take them for a walk, for a while in the beginning, I used to occasionally take my phone. I won't do that because I watch people walk their dogs talking on the phone or listening to their iPhone or whatnot, and you miss so much of nature because you are so focused in what you're doing with technology that you might not see the bunny. Like, I see bunnies on this one part of where I walk, and there's a butterfly bush on another part of the walk. And there's a dog that lives in this house, and another dog that'll be in the window there. If I were on the phone or I were listening to music, I most likely wouldn't see any of that. And that's so much of what we miss, and that's the other part of what's sacred, to be aware of all of the surroundings around you, to really pay attention. We drive the same rutted roads to work every day. Rarely do we veer in a different direction. I like to take different directions when I go out, simply to explore what else is out there. Nature is extraordinary, and sometimes I just don't think we all get enough of that either. Just to stand on grass, now I'm sure this is difficult for you, but you do at Central Park, to be able to go outside and stand barefoot on grass for a period of time is a wonderful thing to bring you back to establishing your relationship with nature. To walk on the beach in the sand and to feel the sand on the bottom of your feet, to feel that stimulation versus your shoes just hitting concrete. That's something that's precious and sacred also.
Right. And what you're reminding me, you're actually reminding me of a short news broadcast I saw a few months ago where they took a house with roommates, a bunch of girls together, and took their phones away for a week. And they struggled tremendously. And after a week, they gave them the phones back, but what they all reported on was how different their relationships were a week later. So even when they had the phones back and they were, you know, were back to using the technology in their lives, the way they interacted with each other was completely different because they had a different kind of appreciation, and the relationships they were ever able to develop were different. So it's not necessarily about saying take it out and that's it, but kind of reminding ourselves what life can look like without it in order to introduce it back in a different kind of way.
Right, where it's not the number one priority any longer because society puts that pressure on us that we feel that it has to be. We have to be attached to our phones. We have to answer every email, every text. I mean, think of how many people are in accidents and whatnot for texting because they have to answer right then and there. And even to talk about that, you can hear my voice picking up. Because I've been in that situation myself. So you just don't, you know, people say don't text and drive. There's many people who feel that they have to because they have to remain in that level of communication, and you don't. Actually, even when driving, you miss so much that way too. You just don't see it. We have tremendous blinders on because our plates are so busy and we try to multitask and take on so many things. When my whole goal of working with people is to bring you back to the center of your home, this beautiful place that you bought to raise your family, fulfill your hopes and dreams, nurture yourselves, I don't want people to lose sight of that. And that's why I want you to come back to it and appreciate everything that you've created and want to be in it together as a family, entertaining guests. That's what life is all about.
Right, and I can just, you know, I hear your passion, and I can imagine in my mind what our lives could look like if instead of coming home, I know for many families with teen kids, home can be stressful, right? There's a
right.
lot of stress. There's a lot. I mean, I was a huge door slammer during my teen years, but that we can really change our environment into a place that is actually the home is nurturing. And
right.
that's where we calm down as opposed to where we explode.
Right. Right. And how you can incorporate scents and smells, natural smells. Nobody passes up home-baked chocolate chip cookies. That's one of the greatest smells ever. It's one of the things that moms look forward to do. When kids go away to college and they come home, what do moms do? They have their favorite foods for them because the kids don't get them in college. That whole exchange of that child coming home from college and being at the kitchen table again or the dining room table and sitting down as a family and eating and mom cooking that great meal, to me, is a representation of sacred. Those are the things that are so precious about what life is. That's why you had children. That's why you bought this home. You know, that's the reflection of the dreams and the wishes coming true. Now as your kids grow older, they come back home. And you still go back to things that you had done in the beginning life that you've created with them.
So with that image of chocolate chip cookies in our mind, which
mm-hmm.
is one that I love, I'd like to ask you, Jill, to take a minute to share with everyone listening today what the free gift is that you have for them today.
I am honored and excited to let everyone know that I have written a book on sacred space, and I have to give my great, great gratitude to you, Tova, because you are the inspiration by contacting me to be a part of this wonderful summit. So my book is available, and what my free gift is, I am sharing my introduction of what happened to me that caused me to view life as being so sacred and the space that I live in as being so sacred. And the very first chapter of the book, it's on journaling. Another thing that I find is very, very important to be able to express ourselves and put our thoughts down on paper. I think it's great if you want to do it electronically. There's something so much more bonding with you and your thoughts when you handwrite it in a lovely book and with a lovely pen. So my free giveaway is to give that to all of the listeners on this wonderful summit. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Jill. I'm, first of all, so excited for you. I'm so happy that this all came together, and I'm excited that so many people are going to be able to share and really learn from you into your vision and learn how they can create these sacred spaces in their own environment in an easy and a simple way. So thank you very much for you willing to share your gift with everyone. And thank you for sharing your knowledge with everyone today and really helping us understand what sacred space is and the importance of creating sacred space in our environment for ourselves, for our family, for our girls, and really what impact that can have on our lives. So thank you so much.
It was an honor and a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone, who joined us today. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. I hope that you go into our Facebook group and share with us your comments and your thoughts, your ideas, anything you'd like to contribute to the conversation. I look forward to hearing from you and interacting with you all. And I'm very excited to see you again tomorrow. So have a great day in the meantime, and love to you all.